No.
हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम शांति 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 ओम जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। जय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जनं कीर्तयेत्। We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 2, text number 21. Bhidyate hridaya grantha, chidyante sarva samshaya, kshiyante chasya karmani, drishta evatmanishvare. Thus the knot in the heart is pierced, and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the self as master. Purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Attaining scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead means seeing one's own self simultaneously. As far as the identity of the living being as spirit self is concerned, there are a number of speculations and misgivings. The materialist doesn't believe in the existence of the spirit self, and empiric philosophers believe in the impersonal feature of the whole spirit without individuality of the living beings. But the transcendentalists affirm that the soul and the super soul are two different identities, qualitatively one, but quantitatively different. There are many other theories, but all these different speculations are at once cleared off as soon as Sri Krishna is realized in truth by the process of Bhakti Yoga. Sri Krishna is like the sun, and the materialistic speculations about the absolute truth are like the darkest midnight. As soon as the Krishna sun is arrived within one's heart, the darkness of materialistic speculations about the absolute truth and the living beings is at once cleared. In presence of the sun, darkness cannot stand, and their relative truths, they were hidden within the dense darkness of ignorance, became clearly manifested by the mercy of Krishna, who is residing in everyone's heart as the super soul. Is the end of the one paragraph of the
Okay, yeah, we can start there. That's good, I think. So this features that that knot in the heart means that knot, the Hridaya Granthi. It means is that there's that mood of attachment to or desire or faith in that the material world and material activities can make you happy or make you satisfied. And so basically the whole world is running after that. Or if you negate that, as the other group, then they negate that, they get rid of relationships, they get rid of attachments, And then they, you know, try to go beyond so that they are free from the material entanglement in their idea. But unfortunately, because they've removed attachment, but the thing is the attachment then gives you that there's something that you're attached to. So, you know, if you're attached to, let's say, family or money or position or any of these things, it's all based on, see, having a prestigious position only has value if someone else appreciates it. Right? Because like I was talking with somebody once about the value of these super expensive cars. You know, they cost, you know, millions of dollars and stuff like that. What's the advantage? Because driving around in most cities, it's not an advantage. The roads are bumpy and they have those, you know, those little bumps there to keep you from going too fast. And, you know, all these things, it's a great problem for these cars. And, you know, where you're going to park it, where you're going to go this. And even if you can do 300 kilometers an hour, there's a good chance you're not going to get more than 50, because most places 50 is the speed limit anyway in the city. And so then, you know, you're going to have all these different points that are there. So what's the actual advantage? You know, they're not necessarily very comfortable and anything like that. But then this other person told me it's actually that moment when you get out of the car and everyone notices you and the car, and you have this car, and then the particular, you know, admiration or, you know, interest or whatever it is, the emotion that comes up from seeing you connected with that car, that's actually the moment of their happiness. Otherwise, most other things aren't. It's very rare, unless they're out in the country road, there's nothing, or they take it to a track somewhere, then you can get the full benefit. But otherwise, most of the time, it's the benefit of people just, you know, or you stop at a light and someone pulls up to you and sees the car and, you know, nods their head or something like that. That those are the moments. So we have to remember is that means the fear in material life, you know, is you can say in karma, is envy, because people will be envious. But it's because you have the relationships, you have the things. Everybody doesn't have the same amount because they don't have the same karma. So someone who has more is going to have that happiness, but at the same time as the other people are jealous and envious. So as long as it's just that admiration or jealousy, then, you know, it makes them feel superior. But if it turns into an act of envy, then it's going to be a problem. So their identity as something mundane, and their attachments therefore are with mundane, because they're doing and what they're, you know, them as the subject and the what they're attached to as the object and that interaction, then that will generate envy, right? And that's the fear that comes up from karma. Now gyan, you've rejected karma, so there is no relations, there is no you know, objects of attachment and this and that. So now they've removed all that. And so they can, because the whole idea is the inspiration for liberation is because here is a problem. It's not necessarily that they're looking at Brahman looks so fabulous. It means that the material world is so much of a problem, then Brahman starts to look interesting to them. You know? So, you know, so it's just like there isn't something else for them. Brahman is a superior position, but how they're viewing it is not, you know, appropriate. But now they've removed everything. Now the fear comes up is loneliness, because there's no people, no relations, no attachments, and you're alone. So we can see in both of them, then, you know, you're being controlled by, you know, the environment around you. And so then here is then he's saying is that And all these will be doubts. One will have doubts about how you can enjoy yourself, or that enjoying yourself is important, or one is attached to, no, you can't enjoy yourself here, it's all nonsense. And so then that aspect of detachment, you know, with some knowledge. So both of those, they're going to have many doubts as it, just like, how do you enjoy yourself? Everybody has a different idea how they'll enjoy themselves. Let's say, you know, people have been very busy and now they have a day off or a few days off. What do they want to do with that? Right? So different people will do different. Someone will just want to sit at home and sit around like a sack of potatoes, right? Someone else will be, oh, great, we can go and do this and do that. We never get to do. And someone else will, you know, someone else will want to play video games all day. Someone else will want to go for a walk. Someone else will want to go for a drive. You know, so you have all these different ways, and each one thinks the other one's not actually that great. Otherwise, they'd be doing it. So the speculation on how you'll be happy and all that is going to be varied. And then the idea that how you're going to be free from the material entanglement and all that, they have all these philosophies. And each one has a different idea, you know, like probably mentions the Munis. Then they have that position because they have their own philosophy. Right? And so then, you know, so, you know, the speculation, it becomes kind of like what they can do, some taste, something that is there, though we know it's very dry. So by being engaged in bhakti and hearing about the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, it clears all these doubts. There's no longer an attachment or an interest in karma, and there's no longer an interest or attachment to moksha, because one knows that none of these can give you any satisfaction. So then one actually goes beyond all this, becomes fearless, and then is able to properly situate oneself in Krishna consciousness, right? Because that, so now you see, as it mentions, the self, you know, I mean, as the master, means, in other words, it's not the material nature is controlling you, the modes are controlling you, or these aspects of dharma, artha, kama, but the soul is actually free from material entanglement. So the soul is actually superior to the material consciousness. And so in that position, then is there. But then, you know, we'll see as it goes on, then, you know, that means then bringing that we are therefore master of, you can say, our, you know, I say desire, destiny, and we apply that to Krishna. So we surrender to Krishna. And so we choose that life will go what pleases Krishna. It is our individual choice. So that is knowing who you are and acting in that capacity. Because for the materialists, they have to be functioning under the modes, and depending on their modes combination, what way they want to be happy, right? You know, what they think will be happy. So they're controlled. So they're not actually master. Maya makes it look like you're master. Oh, you can make this choice or that choice. But it's all under her control, right? You know, just like one, it was in the context of what do you call that? Karna Beta. Well, at 1 year old, you know, then the child, then they get, you know, the head shaved for the first time. And they also pierce the ears, right, at that time. So I was asking someone like that, how, you know, isn't it a problem for the child, you know, like this? And you know, either that, you know, at one, it can also be done at one, that the ear piercing can be done at one, be done at three, then at five, like that. And so then they were saying is that it's not a difficulty, because you give the child a choice. right? If it's a choice, do you want your ears pierced or not? They may say no, because it'll hurt. But if that's not the choice is, do you want your ears pierced with the gold needle, solid gold needle, or with the iron needle? Right? So they're going to say, oh, the gold needle, you know, because it's better. So you haven't given them a choice whether they're going to pierce the ears or not. It's a matter of, you know, with what. So Maya doesn't give you a choice of not being engaged under the modes. It's just you have a choice of what modes: goodness, passion, ignorance. You want to mix a bit, you know, like this. And so that becomes the thing, which for the 14 planetary systems, which species, you know, with the, you know, so many choices are there, but it's still all within the material world, you know, and the liberations that, you know, you have to give up all that, but it's still, you can say it's in connection with the material world because it's negative. It means not this, not this. Right? But the spiritual is positive because it's about Krishna. So that's what Prabhupada always says. It's still negation. It's still negative. You can say, but they got out of the material world, but all they did is negate the material world. They didn't accept the spiritual world. They didn't accept service to Krishna, a relationship with Krishna. That's positive. So therefore, then understanding the self as master means that the self is master over the material existence, right? I'm the controller and enjoyer. He's above that. But his nature is that of servant, you know, and as, you know, being so small, then he takes shelter, you know, naturally of Krishna, but of Krishna as, you know, under the Vaishnavas, under the devotees. And that's then actually being master. Because then you've done what is the right thing to do. It is your choice. You're not controlled by the modes. Right? So that's the... Yes? Is that okay? Any questions on that? Or yes, Mataji?
Yes, Mataji, Krishna. I'd like to ask that sometimes it appears that we have many choices also in devotional service, what to do. And I remember you mentioned that there is a stage in Anatta Nivritti where one thinks like, should I take sannyas or should I get married? And it's like, I could do so many things for Krishna. So could you please explain what is the problem? Can it be a problem of making the right choices in devotional service?
And yeah. It appears?
There are many things I could do for Krishna. I could do.
Oh, okay. Yes. Means the whole thing is to see is that who's serving Krishna, right? It has to be we're serving Krishna. We're the soul, right? And so then, and what are we serving Krishna with? That'll be the body, mind, and words, right? Which is not us, not here. The spiritual world, yes, but here, no. Right? Mm-hmm. And so then it comes down to, okay, then for us to serve, okay, what is the particular situation or nature of the gross and subtle body that we have, where it is right now? Not what it was or what it will be. What is it now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't go as, well, when I was 5 years old, then, you know, I went to the, you know, nursery school and all that. And so then I could go to the nursery school. It says, no, but you're 27 years old. No, you won't go to the nursery school. You know, you have to see what it is. Oh, but then, you know, I'll be, you know, that's the problem. You know, it'd be so difficult walking. I'll be tired and all this and that. And so, you know, like that, so we won't be able to go out for things like that. It says, no, you're not 87 years old. You're 27.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. Oh, you know, wouldn't it be easier just to fly there? So you're not a bird.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You know, so you have to be able to see is you're the soul. So what do you have? What actually is there? What nature do you have? What does it require according to your particular position of advancement? That's what you're looking at. And so then here that, I can't remember the Sanskrit for that position. I think it's sankalpa vikalpa or something like that. So sankalpa is a determination and the vikalpa is a weakness. So here is that, okay, I could get, you know, I could be, you know, like you said, the example, you know, be, we could get serious, take sannyas and like that. And, you know, and like that, you know, in other words, be renounced and that, and just get full-time service, full-time chanting and everything. But at the same time as, you know, the shastras do say that, you know, you can engage yourself, whatever your position, you know, bane tako, grihe tako, bane tako, sada hari bolida, it doesn't matter. So then I could be married and have this and that. So it's like, they're having a determination to get serious, but then things that that bring out their weaknesses and their attachments and all that, then it's, that's also there,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. So then that's where it's an anartha, is because you want to get serious, but you're not so serious. Because we see the next one, fourth mm-hmm. stage of anartha nivriti is then war with maya. You know, you're going to, you know, no, we're doing this. You know, and Maya's going to have her tricks and that, and you push on and, you know, it's just like that. But this one, it's like Maya does, you don't have to have Maya attacking you. You do your own, you do the own, you know, offense and defense. You know, you think, yes, I'll do this, but, you know, maybe that it might be too difficult and whatever. You know, it's just like you have things, yeah, we'll do this and that. No, but what about this later? And, you know, we'll just be, you know, live in the temple and do full-time service. Yeah, but later on, what if you decide not to and you need to have a job and you don't have any qualifications? So then, you know, like this and that, so better to go, you know. Like, so you get all these kind of, these is that, that's that view to vikalpa.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is that you're the soul. And so you need to be nicely engaged according to your nature, fully engaged according to your nature. Now, if it's a matter of you would be properly engaged in family life, that's what you do. But you're doing that because that's how you'll be nicely engaged. But if it would be, that would be more of a distraction or like that, you would be better engaged, you know, being doing like, you know, being in the temple, doing all those activities, then you should be doing that. So whatever it is, that's what you have to see. You have to see is what will give us, in which way will we make the best advancement? Because there's ideal situations, but we have to see is, can we take advantage of those ideal situations?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, just like, yeah, I could sit in the temple and chant all day, but then after half an hour, I get restless and want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then on top of that, you have a temple commander that's also, if you didn't get up and come to him and ask what we could do, he would have come to you anyway, you know, so whatever. So the point is you have to see is what can you take advantage of? What can you actually engage? So it, the house means, in other words, if by being renounced, you're going to be thinking about household life, right? Then, you know, then better to be involved in household life. But if being involved in household life, you completely forget about devotional life, then that's not good either. Because of the two, the most important is spiritual. So then you need to just see how to balance that. How much, you know, it's just like eating. How much do you eat? You know, mm-hmm. you have a tray of a full tray of lasagna and no one's around. Yeah, in your mind, you could eat the whole thing, but it's not going to happen. Right? You're going to be asleep before you get through the whole thing, right? And there's a good chance that somebody's going to come along and see yourself there, you know, with your face, you know, you're fully asleep with your face inside the lasagna tray, you know, and all that. And they're going to be taking pictures and it's going to be on Facebook, right? Or whatever is going on these days, you know, so, you know, it's not a reality. So you can say, okay, I can eat one piece or maximum two pieces and that's it. You know, and then you can think, okay, now what can you do with the rest? Okay, I can put it under my bed and eat it tonight at midnight, but you're still not going to be able to eat anymore, right? There's more pieces than you could eat. And, you know, will you be hungry then? And, you know, what the trip? What if someone wakes up? This, that. So then it might be easier you eat your one or two pieces and then see if there's anybody else who wants. Or if you know there's some devotees, take it over where they are and everybody sit down together and eat. You know, like that. So you're getting how much you're going to eat, and you're distributing and having nice association. And so it's just a matter of seeing in your situation how it can be best engaged. Because just saying, I'll be a householder, that doesn't answer your Krishna conscious, you know, need. Because how are you going to do? Okay, you have a place, and then there's, you know, so do you get a place that's close to the temple so you can always go? You know, do you make your house into a temple and then you can do your own things? Or your house also, you have facility for doing programs, or, you know, you have some, you move where some devotees are. Like I heard of one community that they had, I think, a few devotees that they were, they as their business worked in real estate. So they knew all the places in the city, you know, because they either had contacts who was renting them, or they were renting them, you know, or somehow or another connected. So they would work out, okay, there's different groups of devotees live, you know, like basically, where do you live? Where is this, that? What do you have to do? Where's your job? You know, this and that, or if you're going to school, whatever it is, they would take all that and then figure out, okay, which neighborhood in the city would give you the best opportunity for association of the devotees and, you know, coming to the temple and all that. And so you have all these groups of devotees all around the city in different places. You know, so it's something that they've worked out. They figured out that, you know, okay, this is important. It's a service we could do. And, you know, I mean, the devotee pays for it. It's not that they're doing, what do you call it? It's not like they're spending any money, but they're doing the work for free. Right? Normally you have to pay real estate guys to find places for you. They would find it for you, but you have to, you know, you have to pay for it. You sign the contract, do all that. But the point is they will work it out. So it makes it the easiest for you. Right? So the point is you have to see that, then the family, then, you know, the children, and then this and that, you have to figure out how all that's going to be connected to Krishna. You know, that's the idea. Not that, okay, we'll jump into the water and then we'll see, you know, what we do next, you know. Was there half an inch of water? There wasn't enough there. Or it's one of those, you know, bottomless, trenches. There's no water. Is it full of sharks? You know, you don't know what's in there, you know. So point is you should figure out before, like Manu mentions, a Brahmin should never go into a river that he doesn't know. Right? You know, most people, when they see some water, they just, yeah, and jump in. Brahmin should check it first. You know, he has to use his brain. It's not just, so he'll see what's there. He'll check the water. Does he see movements of things? What is the water? Can he see in the water? Not, you know, do something there. And if he can't tell at all what it is, can he swim? Right? Because if he can't swim, then why go into deep water? Otherwise, just sit next to the water there, take your loda and pour the water over you, take your bath, you know. So the point is you should know what you're getting into. And so that's the whole thing. Know what it means, you know, in this example of, you know, moving into the temple and just being full-time there, or, you know, in this case, taking sannyas. You know, so it means, should I take up a renounced lifestyle, or should I take up a family lifestyle? Like this kind of thing. What are you getting into in both of them? So you're going into it with your intelligence. It's not just sentiment. Sentiment, oh, material life so difficult, so I should be renounced. You know, it's nice sentiment. It's a simpler sentiment. But at the same time, if you don't know, it's just sentiment. You have to have knowledge. You know, or yes, family life, it's recommended. But recommended how? By being Krishna conscious. It's not just saying, being renounced is good and being a family person is not good. It's saying, pick this situation in which you can engage your body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. So that's the point as far as meaning the soul is in control here. It means that they're seeing what is actually there and making choices with intelligence. Right? Then that works. So whatever situation you're in, if someone's already a family person, it's not that, oh, now they just, you know, renounce, run to the forest and all that. It means if family life is not favorable, then that's a point. If it's favorable, what's the problem? right? Because it's not inherently good or bad. Does that make sense? You know, it's just let's say, a knife is not inherently good or bad. It's a knife. It cuts things. Now, you can use it for proper things and cut your potatoes and that for cooking lunch. Or you can use it, you know, in bad ways to go, you know, slash somebody's tires on their car, you know, do stupid stuff. So the point is the renunciation or the family environment is in itself is just a mechanical situation. It's a situation of which certain mechanics can be performed, right? And so then you have to see what's favorable. Like you see in Vrindavan, how many renunciates are there in Braj? Right? Durvasa Muni comes one day, like that. But otherwise, then, no, you have Brahmins there, and all, but they're generally family people, like that. The pastime of the Yagyic Brahmin, wives of the Yagyic Brahmins, point is they're married, you know? So it's all centered around the cows. So it all has that village and that household kind of environment. So it's there, you know, and so that's recommended. But like here, it's not as ideal because there everything's about Krishna. In other words, you need some environment in which to situate yourself to make Krishna the center. So there it is. So their parents, they take care of their kids and take care of the house. It's the secondary feature. The primary feature is their remembrance of Krishna and service to Krishna. Right? But because there, everything's about Krishna, primary and secondary, you don't have to make the distinction. But here, that we generally tend to engage in the secondary and not even remember the primary. So then we have to make the distinction so that we remember. So then you have to see is if by being in family life, then I won't be, let's try it the other way. If by being renounced, then I'll be thinking about family life instead of Krishna, better to be in family life, right? If by being in family life, you're going to completely forget Krishna, then better to not be so absorbed, right? You know, you have to see what's the best situation in which I'm going to remember Krishna. That's what we have to see. That's the point to see, because the material world means trouble. Doesn't matter. The brahmacharis, they have trouble. The grihasthas, they have trouble. You know, whatever it is, it's trouble. It's just what will bother you or not. You know, like the brahmachari is sleeping on the floor. You know, and so if it doesn't bother him, then it's much easier. Now you have your mat, you roll it out, you sleep. Morning, you roll it up, put it away. Hari Bol. You know, but then for some people, it's that's too difficult. You know, they'll be thinking, oh, it's so difficult. You have to get the mat. You have to find some place to sleep because wherever you slept yesterday, someone else is sleeping there, and you have to look around and find, okay, yeah, behind Prabhupada's Vyasa-san, there's a space, so I'll sleep over there, you know, and stuff like that. And then, you know, you have to all that. Well, I just have to walk upstairs, you know, and then there's the bed and go to sleep, and so much easier. You know, so for one person, that renouncing is so much, it's easier. I mean, not it's difficult. But for the other person is, I don't have to worry. I just have a mat. I can sleep anywhere. I don't need a big bed and sheets and this and that. And that's so much trouble for them. So for each one, for the renunciate, household life is the problem. For the householder, renunciation elements of that or too much of it is the problem. So that's why then devotional service is always, those who can be successful in devotional service are ones who are not too attached, not too renounced. Because if they're too attached, they can't use it for Krishna. If they're too renounced, they can't use it for Krishna. Right? If I'm renounced from anything, you know, I can't use it for Krishna. Like Prabhupada gave that story of a story about this Indian yogi or Indian guru. And, you know, he was famous because he was so detached, right? And so people would come to give him money. He'd be standing there, you know, like this and talking and that. They'd go to give him money and his hands would go behind his back. You know? And then they'd all think, oh, he's so renounced. Oh, this guy is so amazing. Like that. And Prabhupada said, we're not like that because he can't use money for Krishna. We can. So you bring money, we walk forward and take it. Because we'll use it for Krishna. So that's the point. If you're too renounced, you can't engage things in Krishna's service that need to be engaged. You know, and if you're too attached, you also can't because you think it's yours and you're going to be, you know, distracted in that way. So therefore, you have to find what works for you now. It works now? Yes. And then you see, okay, where it's going. You know, and if you see as yes, okay, being brahmachari like that or being... that works for me. Okay, then you try it. You run it now. Especially if you're younger, then that's good. Run it. And then if you see with time it works good, you're comfortable with that, you continue. And then if you see, well, I can see is that it's good now, but you know, I'd be more comfortable in a household kind of situation. So then you see, okay, I should do this for X amount of time, get nicely trained, then I'll be a nice grihasta. You know, and think, can you take care? Do you have facilities? Can you do all these things? Because that's also another point, you know, of getting married. You should have some facilities. So like that, then one tries to see what is the best situation, right? You know, it's just like that is that, you know, should I, if the you know, we're having, you know, the feast, you know, the you know, how you say, nandotsava feast after Janmashtami, should I just, you know, be renounced and only eat one tulsi leaf, you know, like that? Or you know, should I just, you know, however much prasad I can get and just eat so much that I can't even move? You know, so we have to find the balance in between. Is that okay?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Yes, Raghunachi.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I only want to ask you if also, in this case, some part of the guru, which he is leading the disciple, what is the best way for him how to deal? Or
yes, means that's there because, as Prabhupada mentions, I'm not sure if it wasn't in some previous purports that we were discussing, either there or in a Thursday class, where Prabhupada's making the point where the guru means is the idea is that those who are leading, then they understand the primary, you know, sadharma, this prime direct activity, and they understand the indirect, the secondary. Because the primary is the soul. And engaged in devotion. The secondary is engaging the body, mind, and words, right? Because in the spiritual world, because of your primary mood and affection towards Krishna, therefore you have a particular body, you know, mind and intelligence, right? So it goes that way because it starts from subtle to gross, right? Even though there it's spiritual, so it's not so gross, but I mean, just meaning it's a more centrally perceivable situation. On the material world, then looking at it from the material side, it's the same principle because it's a reflection. But it's by your mundane consciousness, wherever it is, therefore you get the particular material body that manifests that. Now, taking up devotional service, we're moving back to the original, but so in the spiritual world, they have a mood and they have a body in which they can serve. So here we develop that proper mood, but then we also have to see is that proper aspect of how do you say that what we have, what services can it do? So in the spiritual world, you have a particular rasa, so you don't go outside of the rasa. That's rasa bas, right? So, but here, because it's not a matter of that. It's based on the external, the gross and subtle body. You have to do things that match the gross and subtle body, right? Otherwise, that's called Shankara. You know, Varna Shankara, Ashram Shankara, like that. You know, like the, you know, let's say the brahmachari who is always, you know, thinking of things on making his life comfortable, that's Ashram Shankara. Or you have the grihastha who's too renounced and all that and doesn't do things, take care of the family, that's also Ashram Shankara. Right? It means the point is that you're not situated properly, you know, or we understand he's a Brahmin, but he thinks, you know, like a business person, you know, or whatever it is they try to do, or the businessman, you know, opens a school, you know, to educate the people, but actually it's just to make money, you know, it's things like that. This is all Shankara. So the whole point is just like on the spiritual platform, the primary platform, you avoid Rasa Bas. On the second platform, you avoid, you know, Varna Shankara. That's where it opens. But we see as Arjuna in the Gita, he's talking about this Shankara. But the point is he's not bringing in the primary. What about the soul? What about the soul acting according to its actual nature? So he's worried that if there's this war and all the leaders die, then the general populace will be ruined, because now they'll just do whatever they like rather than under direction. They won't act according to their nature. So he's talking that, but he doesn't bring up about the spiritual. So you can see is already on the material platform, he's already talking about very high levels of material perfection. You know, it's not like he's grossly in ignorance here, right? Like that, he doesn't understand how things work and this and that. But the point is, if he doesn't understand, since we're the soul, then he's taking that position. That's not good for us, right? So in other words, if that position of his is being rejected by Krishna, that means any idea we have about the material energy in the material world is rejected. You know, from the example of if you reject liberation, that means the lower level karma is automatically rejected. So if you've already rejected, you know, properly performed, you know, varnashram or dharma, that means then anything below that position is rejected. You know, Vaishya, Shudra, outside of that, whatever you like, you know. So we see is that we're starting off with a highly religious person, but he's not come to the point of eternal religion. That's why Krishna says he's a fool. He's talking like a you know, a learned person, because he's learned in the Vedas. He's learned in, you know, what are the duties within the Varnashram system, and how it all works and how the social structure and everything works. But he's a fool because he's not including the soul. We're humans. We're not animals. Animals, all they do, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, that's it. And they work within their thing. And if you do something different than what they do, they think you're weird. Like that. The animals, if you're the same species as them and you act differently than them, they'll all think you're weird and reject you. You have to do, if you're in a society of dogs, you have to do dog stuff, right? Otherwise, they'll think it's weird. Like I remember once a dog, that we were going in the street and somehow or another we got a flat tire. And you couldn't stop where we were. So we had to drive for some bit. But when you have a flat tire, the tire goes around and makes all kinds of weird noises and it moves. And, you know, it's just not normal. And so the dog had never seen that. They've seen cars and they've seen tires, you know, millions of them, but they've never seen a flat tire going down the road. And so the dogs were out barking and like that, like it was some kind of demon there. They weren't just a general car. They were up close to the tires or moving, you know, barking at it, you know, like making sure that the tires, you know that not to bother them, because they don't know what it is. You know, so the point is that you have everybody has the Dharma. Humans can choose whether they want to properly follow human Dharma or reject it and become an animal, or that they can take advantage of the human form of life and actually come up to the religious platform and go beyond, to be free themselves from the material world, go back to Godhead. So in other words, it has to be progressive that way. So then, if that mood is there, then you see is that everything works very nicely. So that's the whole point, is that why we're given Varnashram or Daiva Varnashram, is that we have a form in which we can act. And in that action, everything's about Krishna consciousness, and everybody's in a uniquely different position, but there are points of intersection between what you're doing and what others are doing. And so those points of intersection give rise for, you know, exchanges between the devotees and in Krishna consciousness and things like that. Or even with the karmis, to introduce them, or at least to be, you know, just deal with them in a proper way. And so it gives the basis. So in the spiritual world, then everybody there, you know, is in whatever position they're in. And it works very nicely because it matches their mood. But here we just have to see what it is. So if you say, oh, no, but, you know, we're not this body, so we should be able to do this and that, that means you have zero idea of just what phrase you just said. If you say, I'm not the body, therefore I can do whatever I want, that's like saying, I'm not this body, I can fly. Or I'm not this body, so I can live in the water. Or I'm not this body, so I don't have to breathe, or don't have to eat food, or don't have to sleep. Or I'm not this body, I can jump off the building and nothing will happen to me. We're literally dealing with the same level of understanding as all those absurd examples. Because you say, I'm not this body, and then use it for something else. Right? We're not the body. Okay, that's fine. The soul is not the body. That is the philosophy. But can you say the body is not the body? The body is the body. A rock is a rock. A car is a car. Right? So I'm not this car, therefore now the car can fly. Or I'm not this car, so I can drive it down the wrong side of the road, or drive on the sidewalk, or drive through the marketplace, you know, inside the mall, you know, too far to walk. So I drive my car right up to the front of the store in the mall and then get out, you know. You understand? So that's the level of intelligence we're dealing with. So in other words, it's not actually philosophical, it's political. So the rejection of Varnashram and all these things, these are political. And by saying political, we're being nice. Actually, it's just anamoy. It's just sense gratification. I don't think I'm going to benefit from this. I don't want it. So it's like a child. Varnashram means you have certain duties. You have to do those. You may like or not like, but the situation, whatever you choose, it always has something good and something bad. There's no situation where it's only good. You know, or no trouble. There isn't anyone. That's the problem. People are so foolish. They're always looking for that situation that has no problems at all. The only one that doesn't is Krishna consciousness. Right? The material world means problem. You'll always have problems. So even if you're practicing Krishna consciousness in the material world, the environment around you will always be creating problems. But it's not a problem for you. You can be Krishna conscious. Is that?
Yeah, it's like, but in the Bhagavatam, there is the description, Prabhupada is explaining that it's the rule of the guru to engage his own disciple on the guna karma. That means
yes.
Somebody is disappointed what I have to do or something like this. It's the, generally the guru's responsibility to place the disciple to do good position that he can progress in Krishna consciousness.
Yes, but the point is that he's going to educate you in what is your nature and what you can do. So it's not just telling. I mean, in the very beginning, somebody's brand new. What can I do? Okay, you know, we're washing the floor here. Help with that. Until you start to see what the nature is, then you can try to give some idea. So the Vedic system is you're educating the person in what is their, who they are as the soul, what's their original nature, and what's their conditioned nature, and how to engage that conditioned nature in Krishna's service. So it's not just be a householder, but then you have to tell them what's the principles on which it's based. You don't have to get into detail on, you know, how to keep accounts and this and that. That's another thing. But the point is that, but, you know, as we said, is so that's the idea, the engagement and service, then the spiritual master is giving. That's the thing. So, but as we said, if you reject Varnashram, then basically you've rejected the guru giving you service. Unless, of course, the guru only gives service in the direct activities, only chanting, you know, chanting, hearing Bhagavatam, you know, associating, serving the Vaishnavas, worshiping the deity, or serving the Dham. Right? So either you, you know, if you're in the temple, you clean the temple all day, take care of Tulsi in the grounds, or you take care of the deities all day, or, you know, you're hearing and chanting all day, or you're going out on Harinam or book distribution all day, you know, or you're doing some other service for the Vaishnavas. If the, if it's within that, if they've rejected Varnashram and it's within that, then it's okay. Because then what to do? But now if they could, then that they have to be, you know, clever to see that you are nicely and fully engaged by being, you know, engaged in that way. Like that. So they have to keep, you know, seeing and addressing. But otherwise, then the Varnashram, it takes care of all these other aspects. Because if they say, no, but, you know, we have to have communities, and that's not practical. Okay, so communities basically means grihasthas. You know, it's we're not talking about that there's naturally these communities of these, you know, brahmacharis or nuns like that. That's generally not what they're talking about, you know. So that means householders, and householders, then they have an occupation. That's Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. So you say community, it needs Varnashram more. If you have a full-time temple service, you need Varnashram less. You just need the ashram side. And then the leadership has to be able to see what kind of services you can do. You know, you engage them in this service and it goes very smoothly. You engage them in that service, you know, it's a big problem for either them or everybody. You know, or, you know, you find the balance. You know, it's just like somebody can go out on Sankirtan a few days here and there, you know, so therefore, let's say we go out for the, you know, on Sunday for the Harinam or something like that, they go along and they're quite happy. Or you have some special thing going on, okay, Christmas marathon for a few days on major times when it's, you know the maximum people are out, then they go out a few times and they're okay. But if you decide, no, they're always going to be on Sankirtan, it won't work. Right? Or you have that Sankirtan devotee just loves to be out and be out all day and can do that. And you tell him to stay at the temple, it's not going to function for him. So you have to find what works. But the central point is what you can do to serve Krishna. So in other words, the direct activities, you know, it means you still have to be observant and understand there's individual nature. It's not just surrender Prabhu and do this. It's a matter of what they can sustain. Emergency, of course, anybody does anything, you know, but for long-term, you have to see the sustainability. You have to see the nature. But if you're going to go out into communities and you're going to go beyond that, if you're not using Varnashram, you can't help communities. Like, people talk about communities. Who's working with communities? Who's showing the community how they can be Krishna conscious in their position? They may talk about devotional service, you know, in general, but not where it's applied to them. Or they may talk about, you know, other elements within the society. But training, you know, how to see in your position, how it could connect that to Krishna. Is that going on? If it's not going on, what's the point of talking about communities? That'd be like, you know, talking, we got to have a car and oh yeah, the car and this and that. And then I don't know how to drive. I don't know how to take care of it. I don't know, you know, I got an electric car and I want to put petrol in it, or I got a petrol car, but I put the wrong petrol. You know, you have those different octane levels, or I don't know, at least you used to. I don't know if you have any more of those, all that stuff. You know, so certain cars, you have to use a higher octane, and other cars, you can stick anything in there. You know, lighter fluid will work, or, you know, some cough syrup, anything you can stick in there, it'll run. You know, so like that, but they don't know any of that, then why talk about cars? You know, that's the whole point. Community means, grihasthas means, you have to know how they situate themselves in the varnas and in the ashrams, and how they relate to everybody else. Because that's where you have the broad. Everybody in the temple is pretty straightforward. You know, you're the temple president, or you're a senior devotee, or you're a second initiated devotee, or you're just one of the devotees, you know, or you're one of the guests. It's pretty straightforward. You know, you don't have a whole lot of things, but here you have, you know, all these, you know, four ashrams, four varnas, how they relate to each other, what's their relationship, what's the mood of interaction and all that. And if they don't explain that, then how are you going to have a nice, you can say, oh, but we just chant Hare Krishna. Is that what the householders are doing all day? Is that what you're doing all day? No. So that's the point, is that it won't work. So that's why these things are there. That's why they're given, so that you can create a community, create a society that everybody knows how to situate themselves according to their present position in consciousness and advancement, and how they can best serve Krishna. Otherwise, it's very, 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 very inefficient. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Maharaj. It's nice.
Okay. Mataji.
Well, that's just one more small question on the same topic. That
right.
You could kind of explain the difference between, we see in Mahabharata, when Pandu shot the deer, who was a sage, this sage and his wife, they lived in the forest without even a house and no social scene, but they were still grihasthas. So what would make the difference?
That they're Brahmins.
No, I mean, they have simple, very simple facility, much more denounced than most, like brahmacharis and sannyasis, but they are...
That's just the nature of them. They could live like that.
Mm-hmm.
What one thing is there is that before is that there was a lot more nature. People lived more in nature. Not. I mean, you had people living in big cities, like Dwarka is a big city, you know, or Hastinapur is a big city, or Ayodhya is a big city. But most people lived outside. I mean, when we came to India in the 70s, 80% of the population lived in the village. I think it's not like that anymore. I think much higher is living in the city, you know, than 20%. I'm not sure what it is, but whatever. So if you go back, you know, the Vedic age, then, you know, you just have a small percentage would be living in big cities. And even if they did, you know, because they're from cultured backgrounds and that, at least the Dwijas, and especially the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, they know how to live in the forest. Like when the Pandavas go to the forest, it's not like they go, now what are we going to do? You know, it's not that you hear that, you know, the first, you know, couple of chapters of Vanaparva, they're all trying to figure out how to light a fire, and Bhima's getting angry and throwing trees around, you know, and thinks, okay, if it's, it creates some friction. So he picks up one tree and starts beating another with it until it turns into powder. You know, why didn't it turn into fire? And, you know, you don't have like that, you know, Draupadi can't cook on an open fire. So everything's either uncooked or burnt, you know, no, they know how to live in the forest. So it wasn't. So when you talk about the vanaprasthas going to the forest, that it wasn't a problem for them. They knew how to do it. You know, when Sita Ram went to the forest, they, you know, then, and Lakshman, they knew how to build a hut.
Mm.
You know, out of the local branches and leaves and stuff, you could build a hut. It's not that they had any problem. Where they lived at Panchavati, it's where five vata or five banyan trees are. Big banyan trees around, so they lived inside that.
Mm.
You know? And so they know how to do that. So, therefore, then, you know, the Brahmin and that would know how to live in the forest, so they could do that. So that would be the one thing. And two is you have to go, you live according to your means. So they were so poor, they didn't have anything. So therefore, living in the forest and all that, then it's because everything's free. You need firewood, you just pick up the firewood. You need some vegetables, you just pick up the vegetables. You know, you just, whatever you need, you just pick it up there in the forest. You just have to know where it is and what you can eat and what you can't. So then they can live that very simple lifestyle. But that means that both of them were compatible. They were both, it's not just like one can do and the other can't, you know, then, you know, that's the point. You have to see that you adjust. That's why you see compatibility. Kardama, he's a Brahmin, so he lives very simply. Because on Maharloka, where the Prajapatis live, they just live in grass huts. You know, they're Brahmins. They just live in grass huts, even though they're on a planetary system higher than Indra's. But they still live in grass huts. But his wife was the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, right? So she's a princess, you know. She's a Kshatriya, but she's marrying her husband. And so then she just lives that simple lifestyle. And when he's really happy that she can do that, then he makes for a flying palace, you know. With, and when we say palace, it's not just, you know, a fancy airplane. It's actually, you know, like you would have a palace on the ground that a king would have, with all the gardens, and there's deers in the gardens and trees and birds and, you know, ponds and everything. It's all that flies around. You know, does that make sense? You know, like you see one of these, you know, old pictures of estates that the kings would have, you know, their palaces and their gardens and their walkways and all, but the whole thing, so the whole area of Versailles, right, can fly. You know, so he arranges that. So then, you know, she's comfortable like that. So she can live like he lives, but he has the power. And that's the point. He has the power to do that. He's a yogi, you know, he has mystic powers. He can do that. If he didn't have mystic powers, then you're not going to do that. So you have to see what is your means and live accordingly. So that's how you're going to, you know, just like you may have a businessman, but he's just one of those small ones, you know, on the side of the road, runs a little shop, you know, selling something small. Sometimes there's in, I don't know if you've seen in the older parts of the old cities in India, that where it's the marketplace, sometimes you have in between shops, especially at corners and stuff like that. Then you have, what do you call it? A small place. It might be, let's say, yeah, 1 meter or 1 meter 20, sometimes a little wider, you know, like that. That's all the width of the shop. But the shop is that you have up about a meter or so, there's a board. And the guy running the shop sits on top of that. So the shop's actually up. So it's at eye level. He's sitting cross-legged. And you're standing on the ground, but you're kind of talking face to face. And what's underneath, if he has more, you know, either he uses more things or he has more facility, then underneath is where he keeps all his goods. Mm-hmm. Right? Whatever he's selling, he keeps all the ass underneath. But sometimes you see is where he's sitting is one shop, and underneath is another shop. You know, that's dug down a little bit. So the guy sits in there and he does other things underneath there. So in the place of one, there's two, but they're businessmen. They're vaishyas, but they're vaishyas that are this big, you know, and then you have other vaishyas that have, you know, thousands and thousands of branches of their business all over the world. So the point is you have to live according to what your nature is. Does that make sense?
So the like nature would be married, but facility very simple.
Yes, yeah, they're married, and all that you see is that they're interested in the family life. But they, because living out in the forest doesn't mean you can't do. Pandu and his wives, when he went around and conquered, then he gave everything to Dhritarashtra, to see, and he went to the forest. And so he lived with his two wives in the forest, and all his sons were born out there. They grew up out there. So for them, they actually were more comfortable living in the forest than they were in the city. They could live in the city. They're Kshatriyas, that's what they do. But for them, living in the forest was actually quite comfortable. So until I think they were like 5 years old or that, they were living in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And here's, you know, Kshatriyas, and they're not living out there, you know. Because you have a whole scene out there. The Brahmins are out there. Everything's out there and all that. So, you know, they know how to live in such a way that the animals don't bother you and this and that. And so they live like that. It's just very simple. So you can keep it. You can live very simple, but it has to be that it's comfortable. As Prabhupada said, comfortable means not uncomfortable. So for them, it wasn't uncomfortable. It was okay. But for someone else, that would be very uncomfortable. You know, but then, you know, you had that also, you have that, what is it? Having, you know, how much, any arrangement, you have that, what is it? Prabhupada tells that story of the very hairy sage.
Mm.
You know, he was very hairy, so much hair on his body. And I think of, I mean, at least the story is, whether it's one day of Brahma or one lifetime of Brahma, one hair would fall out. And when all his hairs would have fallen out, he would die. So then he's just sitting there on the bank of the river and that, and no shelter and that. Someone says, why don't you build yourself a house? He said, life's too short, you know, to spend the extra time. So for him, any endeavor not that would be too much. So in other words, for him, the life of that Brahmin couple living in the forest with nothing would be too complicated for him.
Mm.
You know? But others, it's going to be their life is too simple. So.
Thank you.
So you just have to find what works for you. That's the main thing.
Mm.
Right? Because there may be, you can look at other situations, but you have to see as, practically, how does it work?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. So that's the thing. And then, and especially if you have experience of other things like that, then you know it works. So, you know, just like, let's say, someone's trained in brahmacharya, so a simple life and everything like that, and then they get married and all that, but then, and they're comfortable as brahmacharya, so then as a vanaprastha, they'll be comfortable living a simple life because they did it before. You know, it's what they did when they were young. And, you know, generally you think back on things you did when you're young with nostalgia that, yeah, it was nice, it was good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like that, then it works out because they have the experience. That's why then the Dwijas, they would all have that brahmachari training so that they could fall back on that later in life. Does that make sense? At the same time as they grew up with the family, so they would, you know, experience what's the mood and everything in a family and how the exchanges and everything and who did what and everything. And so then you know.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Okay. Anything else? Or? No. Okay. So, G, maybe read a little bit more, please.
In Bhagavad Gita 10:11, the Lord says that in order to show special favor to his pure devotee, he personally eradicates the dense darkness of all mind givings by switching on the light of pure knowledge with the heart of the devotee. Therefore, because of the personality of Godhead taking charge of illuminating the heart of his devotee, certainly a devotee engaged in his service in transcendental love cannot remain dark. He comes to know everything of the absolute and the relative truths. The devotee cannot remain in darkness, and because the devotee is enlightened by the Supreme Godhead, personality of Godhead, his knowledge is certainly perfect. This is not the case for those who speculate on the absolute truth by dint of their own limited power of approach. Perfect knowledge is called parampara, or educated knowledge coming down from the authority to the submissive aural receiver who is bona fide by serving and surrender. One cannot challenge the authority of the Supreme and know him also at the same time. He reserves the right of not being exposed to such a challenging spirit of an insignificant spark of the wall, of the whole, a spark subjected to the control of illusory energy. The devotees are submissive, and therefore the transcendental knowledge descends from the personality of Godhead to Brahma, and from Brahma to his sons and disciples in succession. This process is held by the supersoul within such devotee. That is the perfect way of learning transcendental knowledge. The enlightenment perfectly enables the devotee to distinguish spirit from matter, because the knot of spirit and matter is untied by the Lord. This knot is called ahankar, and it falsely obliges a living being to become identified with matter. As soon as this knot is loosened, therefore all the clouds of doubt are at once clear up. One sees his master and fully engages himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, making a full termination of the chain of fruitive action. In a material existence, a living being creates his own chain of fruitive work and enjoys the good and bad effects of those actions life after life. But as soon as he engages himself in the loving service of the Lord, he at once becomes free from the chain of that. His action no longer creates reaction. It is the end of the purpose.
So also we see here is that when he says master, the self is master, then it means the supreme self. The self means the is Brahman, right? So the supreme Brahman, and we're part and parcel of that Brahman. So when you see the self as master, being saying Krishna as master, and we being part and parcel, then naturally we're servants, and we're beyond the material energy. So as you mentioned here, is that the knot that is cut is that knot of false identity. That I falsely identify with the gross and subtle body, you know, in some way or another. And so that identity is what binds us to the material world. That's why it's a knot. It keeps us here. But as soon as we give up that knot or cut that knot, then we're no longer, connected with the material energy, with the material, idea or material, necessity. And so then we can be nicely engaged in Krishna's service. And because this material world, and we say, oh, but this is the real world. But as Prabhupada mentioned there, you have, absolute truth and relative truth. So you say the real world, but it's relative to you know, the various persons. So what you call real, someone else will say is not. You know, so that's the whole point. It's what's important to one person is not important to another. It's relative. That's the thing. It's, everything is has its importance based on something else. You know, is the car important? You know, you want to drive somewhere? Yes. Is the car important? You know, you're going for a walk and you don't need a car, so no. So that's the point, is it's relative. Everything is seen in relation to someone else. So that is the point, is that underlying is that it's all about relationship. But here it's all both impersonal, because you're just working with the mechanics. And two, it's false, because you're not actually that person in that position. You're identifying with it, so therefore then we become involved in it. But in actuality, we're not that. Spiritual world, therefore, there is that's absolute truth, because everything's in relationship to the absolute. So that means that everything has a relationship to each other. And so then there, everything goes on very smoothly. But here, because you're not seeing the absolute, it's all relative. So it just depends on which angle you look at it. Just like if my idea is that I'm hungry, I want to get something to eat, and that's how I judge what's correct and what's not, I will just continue till I find something to eat. Now, whether what I found to eat is something worth eating, or it's mine that I can eat, or if I've taken somebody else's something like that, you know, so I'm looking at it just like, you know, you sit down at the table, someone else sits down, they have something on their plate, they start talking to someone next to them on the other side, and then you reach over and grab what's on their plate and start eating it. Now, if your idea is get something to eat, that's right. What it's done is it's relative to my perception and need, so it's correct. Now, for the person who that was on his plate, he's going to say it's wrong. Right? And you can say it's no, but there's unlimited living entities who are doing what I just did. All animals that do that. You have something on your plate, you put it down in front of you, and there's an animal next to you, and you look the other way, they'll grab it. Like that. That's just the way it works. You know, so you could say, so it's correct. But it's all relative truth. Yes, it's correct for an animal, but it's not that the animals appreciate it. So two animals, and if you've taken what they have, they'll fight with each other. Like that. You know, you see sometimes a bird catches something, a bug or something, and it flies onto a branch, but it has to, you know, process the bug some before it can swallow it. You know, it's too big, or, you know, it's moving too much or something. So they'll be there, but then they see another bird. And the other bird sees they have a bug. So the second bird thinks, I'm going to take that bug and eat it. So the first bird then has to fly off somewhere else. You know, so they're all working on, it's all relative. So each bird thinks that they're the center. And so then it works. So when you have absolute truth, and relative truth is seen in its, how it can support and be engaged in the service of the absolute truth, that's correct. That's the point. That's what we're talking about. Dharma is serving sad-dharma, or iron is in fire. Right? Then it has some meaning. But otherwise, to just talk modern platitudes on various ideologies, those are all relative truths. And whichever way you argue it, it's one side's going to say it's right and the other side's going to say it's wrong. You know, and then when you're two arguing, a third person will come around, oh, we're both wrong. It's actually like this. And, you know, so for us, is what's right is what connects to Krishna, and what's wrong is what doesn't. You know, so then that becomes the basis for seeing. And so, therefore, then that seeing the self as master, is self means the Atma. And, you know, so the Supreme Atma, we as small Atma follow, you know, serve the big Atma. Then everything works very nice. Otherwise, then there's always going to be a problem. But that's how you judge anything. How does it relate to Krishna? Right? How can it be used to serve Krishna? The nature of this thing, one, how to follow the nature of the thing, and two is how is that connected to Krishna. Therefore, then everything has a nature. It functions in one thing, but not in another. Like, let's say a boat, you put it on the water, it does great. You know, but you put it on the land, it doesn't do so good. Right? So everything has this thing. You can say it's a boat, you know, we're not this boat, so I can, you know, use it anywhere. No, it's a boat, so it has to be used in a particular way. Right? So everything has its laws. Those are given by Krishna, not by us. So then we can see the relative laws in connection with the absolute laws, and then everything becomes very clear. Otherwise, then for others, they're just discussing relative truths. If you get into politics, economics, these are all relative truths. So anything other than Vedanta is a relative truth. So if one is in doubt, what is relative and what's absolute? Vedanta is absolute. Anything else is relative. Now, all those relative things can be engaged, you know, in pursuance of the principles of the Vedanta. But if they're not, they are just relative. But it's not that they become absolute. It's like iron and fire. If it's in the fire, it's hot. You take it out of the fire, it's cold. It's not that once you did it once, you drove your car to the temple once. Now everywhere you drive is now spiritual. No, when you're driving to the temple, it's spiritual. And when you're driving somewhere else, it's not spiritual. That's the idea. So then one can see how to connect everything like that. That good? Yeah, no questions. Okay. So I think then we'll end here then. Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.